East Carolina Manuscript Collection Oral History Interview conducted February the 6th, 1981 with Miss M. Louise Abbott. This is reel number 2 of a 2-reel interview.
I would sit out on the Malu and try to talk with the farmer people as they came in and out from the market. And sometimes I'd look out in the field and there was an eel wiggling that he'd come in from the waterway, just wiggling down the rows of vegetables or the grain.
Did they eat the eel?
Oh, yes, they liked eel. Uh-huh. And they ate snakes in the springtime. They felt, some of these old-time beliefs that in the spring you, they would say, we need to have a bait of snake meat. It'll help our health. I don't know. I never did partake of that.
Just like a generation or two ago, mothers always gave a big dose of castor oil or something in the spring.
Well, it was calamol in our family. And how I hated that. Yeah. But this was what they did. I never did. Never was served a bowl of a dog, but I'm sure some of the Chinese, I've heard it, and I feel pretty sure it's true, that they raise dogs to eat. They like, the Chinese like roasting ears. Corn. They like the corn on the cob. They used to have peddlers on the street who cooked it, and people would come along and buy and just go along the street eating an ear of corn. They liked that. They were ashamed of buying baked sweet potatoes. I enjoy baked sweet potatoes. And I remember my first year in spring in Suzhou, I had the privilege of going up to North China to a seminar. It was a 2-week seminar of rural workers. And on our way out from there to Peking, I kept seeing on the train, we'd stop at a place, and there was the sweet potato peddler. And I kept talking about, I wish I had a baked sweet potato. Finally, the next stop, one of the Chinese ministers went out and got me a good baked sweet potato, and that broke the ice. All the others wanted to, but they are plebeian, you see. That food is, and they were ashamed, but after this queer Westerner got my there by the head. And the Chinese have a nice sense of humor. I mean, they usually have a nickname for you. And you may never find out what it is, but they usually have. I finally found out they called me Sweet Potato.
You made your impression.
And then there was one missionary in Suzhou. That was my first year. She was short. She was just about as big around as she was tall. And some of the Chinese called her Da Kutsi, and it really meant, literally meant, big cabbage.
The nicknames weren't always very complimentary.
No, they laughed. They just enjoyed it. And they were, once you found out what they were calling you, you laughed with them.
Well, tell me, is there any resemblance at all to the food that we order and enjoy so in Chinese restaurants, and what the Chinese people actually ate.
In most cases, it's quite Americanized. I never did learn, I wish I had, but I never did learn to cook Chinese food. But,
what you buy in a Chinese restaurant here doesn't taste like what you...
No, I've been to just one restaurant here that, and they knew that at least two of us had worked in China, and so, you know, they just naturally knew that it'd be better to make it Chinese. And you know, the food in the different parts of China differ.
Right.
Out in West China, it was red hot. That red hot pepper, they would, you would see big mats as big as this room with pods of red paper drying, pepper drying. I remember one school, rural school, where we were there at noontime, and just for conversation, I asked one of the little students, well, what'd you have for lunch? And he or she, I don't remember if it was a boy or girl, said, fun and utsiao. And I said, that meant rice and red pepper. I said, didn't you have anything else? Didn't you have some fish or didn't you have some meat? No, fons, utsiao. And so they used to have seen take a pot of red pepper and chew on it like a carrot. And when I'd go out in the country and had to depend on the rural food, I'd get up from the table and this was each meal. I'd feel like I was just on fire with that hot stuff. I got enough red pepper to last me.
Yeah, I've heard it sound good.
And you know, the thing that makes me feel that there was some connection between West China and India was the fact when in India, parts of India anyway, have highly seasoned dishes. And then too, many of the farmers out in West China would put a sort of like a scarf, a white, around the head, and you know, in India, there. And it was just interesting to be. I didn't think I was tall until I got out to West China, and I kept, every once in a while, I'd hear somebody say, "Kao kao de run, kao kao de run," which literally means tall, tall person. And then I had a very interesting experience one time on a bus. I knew that it was about time for me to get off, so I got up, and among those short people out in West China, I was tall, and I found myself saying to me, "Well, Louise, how much further up are you going?" It was such a funny experience. Just and I don't know, when you get out in the country, for instance, one day Miss Jo and I went to an abandoned church. It had been one of our chapels. And there they had a partition right down the middle, division of the men and the women in the church.
Was that customary?
That was customary.
Just in that area, or?
Well, formerly it was customary. You know, I don't know whether the Baptists do this, but the first week, I believe it is, in May, it's family week. Mother's Day comes in there. And so what we did out there was to make that whole week family week, and to get the families, male and female, to sit together as a group. It took some getting acquainted with that custom. They got to where they would do it, but it wasn't customary. The men on one side and the women on the other. But this division, you couldn't see over it. It showed very definitely that that it was way off. It was taller than, so that you couldn't see over. I get homesick for China.
Think you'll ever go back for a visit?
I have not been back to mainland China. In 74, there were four of us former Southern Methodist missionaries who took a 3 months trip, and we went to Hong Kong and to Taiwan and to Manila and to Singapore and then up into Malaysia, Cebu and Kapit, and then we came back to Singapore, and then we went down under to Australia and New Zealand and the Fiji Islands, and it was wonderful to in Malaysia, part of the population there is Chinese. And they are good business people. And
is that of recent origin, or has it always been that way for some generations?
I know it's been quite a few years. On Palm Sunday, when we were in Cebu, one of my party and I took a trip down the Rajang River with two of the Chinese ministers to visit in that morning in the Chinese church. They didn't have enough ministers, so it was an occasion when the minister got there. They tried to go at least once a month. And so that Palm Sunday, they had the full works. They baptized babies. They took into the church adults. They had the sacrament of the Lord's Supper and a full sermon.
Goodness.
All one, and they'd already had Sunday school before we got there. And then, after a Chinese meal, we crossed over the Rajang and went into a community of Ibans who were formerly headhunters. And we have met this work with them. One of these ministers who piloted our little boat, a Chinese, when he was in the seminary in Cebu, his senior year, he requested that when he finished, he wanted to go as a missionary, a home missionary, to the Ibanians. Mm-hmm. And that Sunday that we were out there, you see their homes. Well, it's the original couple with their sons and daughters, and then their children. It's a whole community, and the houses are up on stilts, and they carry on their they are a great fishermen, mm-hmm. And then they have their little fields. I think they grow most of what they eat. And that Sunday when we got there, they were drying their rice. You know, it had been flailed, and they were drying that on. And but they got together in one of their bigger rooms for the worship service. And we sit, most of them sat on the floor. And I wondered what they would have. Well, we started out with singing, and then Mr. Who had asked either my companion or me to speak to them, and I said, well, what in the world can I say? He said, will you just talk to them, tell them why you are here, why you went to China, and tell them about your family and so on. And and he interpreted for me. And I told them that 3 weeks before I left USA to go to China, coming home one Sunday night from a service, I was already homesick. When I got home, we had a porch that went halfway around our house. And so I went around on the left-hand side, no, it was the right-hand side of my home, and I looked up in the skies, and there was this great big old moon. And again, I felt so sure. God said, well, now, Louise, don't be, don't feel that way. You know that moon is going to be over there when you get there. It's there just like it is here. And so I was reassured.
Still, I would think...
Oh, let me go on a minute.
A momentous decision, a momentous move to make.
But the reason I started with that was just this. On the way back, I told him how homesick I was, and he said, Miss Peace, let me tell you something. What you told reminded me so much of my early experiences with the Ebons. He said, I was having such a hard time getting the language that one day one of the Ebon fathers came to my room and he found me crying. And he said, son, what's the matter with you? And he said, he just opened up and told him his trouble. He said, all right, you come live with us. And I assure you, you'll learn the language and we'll take you in. And I appreciated so much his sharing that with me after I had told him that I'd been homesick too already before I left home. I didn't get as homesick as some people did, but the language early, it was difficult. But you got to have the language.
Absolutely.
And it's so rewarding. I remember so well, I don't know how long I'd been studying. It's less than a year, I think. One day I suddenly realized I was not thinking in English and then translating into Chinese, but I was thinking in Chinese. Another time I could have shouted.
Right.
And then I got to where I'm dreaming it. And that was fun.
By that time, China had to come home, and when you left to come back to the United States, you got sick.
That's right. That's right. I think the precious thing about it is finding out that the human family other than we look differently, but inside, the basic you and basic me, and the same thing with Silly and all of them, we're alike. We're God's children. And when you can talk with them, and they with you, and they're so patient about your mistakes. They tell all sorts of funny things about mistakes that people have made. I think one of them was missionary wife had told the cook what she wanted for lunch was crab, and she said, now get four. And but what she said was shrimp. And he said, well, Missy, are you sure that's what you want? Four shrimp. And so when lunchtime came, now this shows, you know, his sense of humor. He came in with a platter with a four shrimp, but he on his own had gotten an adequate lunch ready.
I understand that they're really